So I put out massive amounts of content, and then I did hundreds of workshops all over the US and all over the world. So by the time I got into the supplement business, I already had a very high level reputation.
As an employer, your business depends on your staff. They are the backbone of your company. But because you face unique challenges managing your team, you need to have the right resources. On this podcast, industry expert Alex Atwood tackles it all so you don't have to.
Mike Mahler, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, brother.
Absolutely, brother. You started your career as being really well known for kettlebells, for training and bringing the use of kettlebells into the US. And I want to go back before that, though. I want to understand, what was it that had you decide that being an entrepreneur, starting your own business, was the path you wanted to take?
Yeah, I never saw myself as an entrepreneur, honestly, because I never got advice from anyone to start a business. It was always go to college and get a job. You know, that's what my dad did. That's what my mom recommended. That's what pretty much everyone I knew in college was doing. They were graduating and they were going to go get a job. And they didn't have any clear idea of what path to take. No one was starting a business. No one was thinking of starting a business. So when I graduated from college, I went to college at Worcester in Worcester, Ohio. I came back to Northern Virginia, McLean, Virginia. I was staying with my parents for a little bit. Actually, I was taking care of their house while they were overseas. I was taking care of one of their dogs, a family dog, and my parents were in Kenya at the time. My dad used to work for the International Monetary Fund, so he was an economist resident out there. And I was looking for things to get into, and fitness was something, as you know, that was something I was always, not always passionate about, but when I was a senior in high school, I started working out. I really got bit by the iron bug, and I never stopped. I started just devouring magazines on training and books and trying all kinds of different things. So training was a hobby that I was always really enthusiastic about. And I always knew I wanted to do something in fitness, supplements being another area that I was always passionate about. But I didn't know what. I didn't have a clear idea of where to go. I mean, I'm a religious studies major, so I didn't have a degree in kinesiology where I saw a path that made sense. I didn't want to be a trainer in a gym. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It just didn't really appeal to me. I didn't see that being something that I would enjoy that much. So when you don't know what you want to do, the problem is sometimes you're open to really bad advice and really bad opportunities because you don't know better. And I came across what I didn't know at the time, network marketing opportunity, Herbalife. Now, I didn't know anything.
MLM.
Yeah. Multi-level marketing, network marketing. Now, I didn't know anything about that. But I got invited to a meeting. They told me about the opportunity. It looked cool to me. I go, okay, this is nutrition supplements. It's a bunch of young, healthy people my age working in this office. So I go, this looks interesting. And I tried the products for a while and I liked the products after a couple of weeks. So I'm like, okay, let me give this thing a shot. Now, back then, network marketing wasn't like it is now. Meaning if you join a network marketing company now, you don't have to buy a lot of inventory. You just sign up, you pay some registration fee. And then when you try to get a customer to buy a product, you just direct them to your webpage with your ID. So you don't have to have $4,000 worth of product in your garage. Mm-hmm. Those days are done because a lot of companies like Amway got in trouble where people would buy thousands of dollars worth of product and they couldn't sell any of it. And then they're stuck with it. So a law was put in place that every network marketing company has to buy back excess inventory. You can't just say, hey, too bad. Have fun with 20 lifetimes worth of soap. You're just going to have to deal with it. With this whole thing, I thought I was an entrepreneur because I'm buying product at wholesale and selling it at retail, but it's basically the worst of both worlds. You basically have all of the negatives of working for someone else and all of the negatives of being an entrepreneur and none of the pluses on each side. Meaning if you work for someone else full time and it's a decent job, you're going to get benefits, medical insurance, things like that. Network marketing, you don't get any of that.
Right.
You run your own business and you're making your own products and services. One, you're building your brand. You're not building someone else's brand. You're building your brand. And right. You're also going to have a much higher profit margin. And then you're not competing with other people because with network marketing, there's thousands of other people in every city that anyone is doing this that are trying to do the same thing that you're doing. So what I will say about this Herbalife experience is it showed me what not to do in terms of building a business, because every mistake you can make as an entrepreneur, I made in that business, primarily blowing a lot of money on marketing, which you should never do. You should position not prospect. When I was in network marketing, all I was doing was prospecting. I'm putting thousands of cards on people's cars and that's pissing them off. I'm putting flyers on telephone booths and people are calling me up, threatening to kick my ass if I ever do it again. You know, I'm putting signs on telephone poles and law enforcement's like, hey, if we ever see you do that again, we're going to arrest you. The whole thing is, like, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this? And here's the funny thing. When I tried to recruit people, right, I would take them out with me on how I did stuff. Like, okay, here's how I do lead generation. So they would come meet me at 2 a.m. and we would drive all night down every road in Northern Virginia, putting up signs on telephone poles, putting up signs on stakes on the side of the road. I mean, after one night of that, no one ever came back. They're like, this is way too much work. Another time I took a guy to pass out cards at the DC Metro and we both passed out 1,000 cards each. And then as we're walking away, we saw all of the cards in the trash cans. I didn't get one call. He didn't get one call.
Mike, you just reminded me of something. Do you know you and I did that in Round McLean? When you were in that business, we would train. And I got some supplements from you. And then you're like, come on, dude. And we like, I remember doing that now with you. You had all that printed out. I remember that, man. That's funny.
I never worked harder in my life. I'll tell you what, I learned a couple of good things. One, I developed speaking skills. And that was absolutely critical when I got into the fitness business because I made a big part of my income was doing workshops. I was extremely comfortable doing public speaking by the time I got into the fitness business. So it was a very fast, I got very comfortable specifically teaching kettlebells very quickly because I had so much experience doing public speaking from network marketing, from Herbalife. And also I learned, man, I've got a serious work ethic. Mm. If I don't succeed in life, it's not going to be because I didn't put in the work. I learned that. I am prepared to do whatever I need to do to make things work. You know, not be immoral, not be unethical, obviously, but I'm prepared to pay the price to be successful. Now, the problem is that hard work is not enough. You can work hard. Look, if I punch a wall as hard as I can, a brick wall, it doesn't matter how many times I hit it. Eventually my hands are going to break and then I'm still stuck there. So you have to have a strategy too. Hard work is important and you need it. But if you don't have the right strategy, it's going to be to no avail.
Yeah. So it's ironic that now you're in the supplement business. And in a lot of ways, that sounds like it trained you not just in the muscle of hard work and in public speaking, but also in that there's a real business there in fitness and health foods and supplements, and even in a system that is as flawed as that, and the scars that you took from that, it did inform what you're doing in your career right now and with your business. Absolutely.
The thing about my supplement business is this. I had a very untraditional path to being a supplement business developer or owner. I was a kettlebell instructor and fitness expert from 2002 to 2012. Strength coach, fitness expert, kettlebell instructor. Basically, I was a trainer. So for 10 years, I wrote articles for every magazine that would publish. I wrote for high traffic websites. I wrote for my own website once I developed one. So I put out massive amounts of content and then I did hundreds of workshops all over the US and all over the world. So by the time I got into the supplement business, I already had a very high level reputation. People knew me as a guy of integrity. I'm not going to just try to sell you on nonsense. So when I recommend something, people don't hesitate. They buy it. So when I got into the supplement business, it was a gradual transition. But what happened is all of the people that had followed me as a fitness person, as a fitness expert instructor, they followed me now into my supplement business. So unlike other supplement companies, I already had a brand and I already had a large following. I already had distribution. And that's why it was such a smooth transition. If I tried to start the very supplement business I ended up doing very early in my career with no distribution, no reputation, it would have bombed dramatically. Just like most supplement companies don't make it. Most of the time it's because they have crappy products. You know, 99% of supplement companies, they don't care about the product working. They just want to put 10% into research and development and 90% into marketing, get as many one-time hits as they can, and then they ride off into the sunset, right? That's the strategy of most supplement manufacturers. A lot of supplement companies are owned by people who don't even work out. They just think people who work out are a bunch of suckers. And if that you market them properly, they'll buy anything, which may be true, but they're only going to buy it once. You're not going to keep buying it. Because here's the most important thing with supplements. People that are enthusiastic supplement users like myself, the only thing we care about is one thing. Does the product work? Is it going to deliver what it says it's going to do? And if it doesn't, you may get us to buy it once, but we're not going to keep buying it hoping for different results. Once we know it doesn't work, we move on and that's it. And we're never going to buy something from you again. You may come out with a great product later, but we're not going to trust you because we bought that first product. It didn't work. Bye-bye. We're done. So the most important thing with supplements is safe products, and then they have to work. The reason why my supplement business does well is not just because of my reputation. It's because I have products that work extremely well. So I get repeat business and then I get referrals. I don't spend a dime on advertising. I've tried advertising in the past. I've done Google ads and Facebook ads and all that. It was never effective because that's prospecting. Positioning is having a website with tons of great content too, so you have stickiness. There's a reason for people to spend time there and to come back. Because someone may need to come to your website 10 times before they're comfortable buying a product. And that's great. Take all the time in the world that you want, because I'm not wasting my time with you while you're doing that. You're reading articles that I've written. That I've got hundreds of articles on my website. I've got hundreds of podcast episodes. I've got hundreds of YouTube clips. There's so much content on my website. It would take someone 10 years to go through all of it. And what happens is you establish value with a new customer. They come and they go, wow, this guy's got a lot of great content and he's so generous with giving this stuff away. It's all free. They almost feel obligated to buy something now.
Right. So you built a personal brand on just really quality content and just giving. That's awesome. So you started to make videos for sale, right, prior to YouTube. So you had experience doing that, right? And in that, did you also build your personal brand there as well? Were those videos published on your website?
They were. So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Videos came maybe, I started in 2002. I made a video in 2003, but it wasn't very good. So we discontinued that pretty fast. I consider my first real video that I made at the end of 2004, and it was called The Kettlebell Solution for Size and Strength. Because now I worked out all the kinks with how to do a good video. And this was content that was actually what I was doing. So it's very authentic. This is how I was training with kettlebells. And I was showing other people how to do it because I had my own style and my own precise goals. And I already had brand awareness before making that video, but not astronomical brand awareness. I was still building my name. I was still building my career. But I didn't start trying to sell videos until I actually had some kind of distribution, whether it's a couple thousand people in a newsletter list, whether it's a certain amount of people coming to my website every day. Again, if I tried to make a video early in my career, number one, it wouldn't have been any good because I didn't have any experience instructing. And two, no one knows who I am. And it was expensive to make videos back then. You're going to pay someone $5,000 and then you're going to pay someone else to edit it. And then you have to find someone to distribute it for you unless you're going to take care of orders yourself. And if you don't have a brand, no one's going to come buy it from you. It was fairly risky. So when I got into the fitness business, I wasn't even thinking about making videos. I was thinking, I'm going to pay my dues and get my name out there as quickly as possible with massive action. And massive action meant writing articles. Now, I'm a known name, so who's going to take one of my articles? Well, here's the clever approach I came up with. I contacted influential people and I offered to interview them for publication. Now, you have to remember, this is way before podcasts and all the technology we have now. Now you can just interview someone on Skype. It's seamless. It's easy. Back then, I had a tape recorder that I plugged into a landline, which a lot of people don't even know what that is.
Because what year was this?
Now, this is 2002. I had this tape recorder I plugged into a phone, and I would record the conversation, and then I would transcribe it because there was nowhere to upload that. I mean, this is a 90-minute conversation. It would take 2 weeks to upload that and take someone a week to download it. So that wasn't even an option. So I would listen to it, transcribe it, and then I would send that into publication. Now, I had a very high success rate with major magazines picking up these interviews because, not because of me, but because of the person I was interviewing. People like Frank Shamrock, first UFC middleweight champion. People like Clarence Bass, legend in the bodybuilding and fitness world. So I was leveraging their names and their brands, but I wasn't taking advantage of them because I wasn't calling them up and saying, hey, can you give me some advice? No, I was saying, here's what I want to do for you. I wasn't pitching them on, hey, can you do this for me? This will really help me out. I was like, no, I want to do this for you. I want to interview you and get into a major magazine to help you out. And people were like, yeah, let's do it. Now, the funny thing is when I would tell people that I was going to do this before I started doing it, people that I used to work with at my last job, they would say, why would anyone want to do that with you? You're nobody. See, this is the mentality that a lot of unsuccessful people have. They never try because they've already engaged in self-rejection. It's like guys hitting on women. Someone's like, hey, man, you should go talk to that girl. It's like, no, she's not going to be interested in me. Well, you know, why would she be interested in me? You know, I've got nothing. It's like, well, not with that attitude, right? So you've already self-rejected, so you don't have to do anything. This is why so many people fail, because they tell themselves it's not going to work before they even try. You don't know if it works or not until you try. So I contacted people and I had a very high success rate. I had this guy, Richard Makowitz, author of Unleashing the Warrior Within, Ori Hofmeckler, author of The Warrior Diet. I mean, I was able to network with all of these very influential people that I wanted to talk to. I would have paid to talk to these people. Instead, I'm getting to talk to them for free, developing real rapport. And then I would get these articles published and I'm getting paid for those articles to get published. And then I'm building my brand, leveraging other people's names, but not taking advantage of it. And after a while of doing that, then I started developing a name where I could write my own articles on various topics, whether it was kettlebell training or how to get bigger and stronger. And I would send those off to publication because I already had contacts now. Now, when I contact Iron Man Magazine, they've already published an interview I did with Clarence. So they're more amenable at looking at an article I did. Everything has to, you have to be willing to pay your dues. Everyone who wants to be an entrepreneur, the mistake a lot of them make is they think they're too good for stuff. You know, I'm too good to do that. I have a master's degree in business administration. You know, that's beneath me. Nothing is beneath you. You need to be able to take charge of every facet of being successful.
Absolutely. So would you just like open the magazine and look at, you know, the right contact and then reach out to them over the phone, right? And then ask them or tell them, this is what I'm doing. Would you do that before you did the interview, or would you do that after you already had the interview?
I didn't even know where the interviews were going to land. But my attitude was, I'll get it somewhere because of who these people are. Forget who I am.
Yeah.
So I would just reach out to them and say, hey, I want to publish. I want to interview you for a publication. I wouldn't tell them what publication, because even I didn't know what it was at that time. And no one really asked, honestly, because again, you have to remember, this is way before a podcast. Now people get interview requests every 10 minutes. It would be really difficult to do the same strategy. But back then, the internet was nascent, and people that are in fitness and MMA, they weren't big time celebrities like they can be now, meaning they didn't have millions of followers and getting hundreds of thousands of emails. That wasn't happening back then. When I emailed Frank Shamrock, I just found his email address on his website, emailed him. It wasn't his press person who got back to me. He got back to me personally. When I emailed Clarence Bass, same thing. So what I would do is I would do the article already, or the interview already. When I contacted Iron Man Magazine, I would get the email address out of the magazine, because you didn't even have to call them. Email was there. I wouldn't even say, hey, would you like to take a look at this? I would just send it to them and say, hey, look, here's an interview I did with Frank Shamrock or Clarence Bass or Richard Makowitz. It's already attached. It's already there. Let me know if it's fit for your magazine. That's all I would say. And they would look at it and tell me yes or no. They go, yeah, this is a great fit. We'll pay you $500 for this. Or this is a great, or no, it's not. And I move on to the next one. In other words, I'm not wasting their time. I'm not emailing them going, hey guys, if I do an interview with Clarence Bass, do you think you would want it? They're not even going to respond to that. You know, you got to take the initiative. I already had the content. I already had it. I already sent it to them. So they take a quick look at it and go, yeah, this is a good fit. So you got to take the initiative with stuff. You don't just wait for other things to happen.
There's two things that I heard. You were adding value to, whether it was Frank Shamrock or Clarence Bass, you were doing something for them. You were being of service and adding value to them by providing them with more promotion.
I'm basically doing free promotion for them.
That's right. You're doing free, and then you're providing value to the magazine, right? Because you're showing them an interview that you've already done, and you're just sending them to it and saying, hey, publish this, right? One common thread is that you're always providing value to whoever it is that you're working with on that end, and whether it's your customer, right?
Look, networking is all about what you can offer the other person. The mistake a lot of people make is they go to networking events and they're thinking, what can I get these people to do for me? You know how many times people deal with that kind of stuff? Successful people deal with people trying to leverage them all the time. And the second they see you doing that, they shut off. I consider myself in that group of successful people now, because I have people coming at me all the time as well. And their whole pitch is on what I can do for them. And I was like, look, I don't know you and I don't care about what I can do for you. But what can you do for me? You're coming to me. You're going, I think this guy can help me out. Okay, well, why are you focused on what I can do for you? You better focus on what you can do for me if you want to work with me.
Yeah.
Anytime I talk workshops with people, no one ever did anything to get people in the room. Meaning if 30 people came in the room, it was because of my efforts. It was because of my promotion and distribution channels and my efforts. And then other people would come in and it would be laughable. People would be like, yeah, let's split it 50-50. I was like, no, we're not going to split it 50-50 because I did 75% of the work. I did 90% of the work. I shouldn't even have to pay you anything. You know why? Your efforts did not result in one person paying to come here. So I always would say this, you know what the most fair way to team up with someone to do a workshop is this. Okay, we're going to team up. We're going to teach this course together. Now you're going to promote it on your platform. I'm going to promote it on my platform. Whatever I get, I keep. Whatever you get, you keep. Guess how many people would take me up on that offer? Not one.
Right.
It also showed me they're not worth working with because they're not bringing any value whatsoever. They think Absolutely. That they have a name. If they had a name, they wouldn't have to team up with someone like me and then expect to, they didn't want me to do all the work and then have, and then just do the fun part, which is going in and teaching. And people like that were never successful. They never did well. I mean, I made really good money teaching workshops. You know why? Because I took care of registrations. I booked the venues. I taught the course. I did everything. I didn't delegate that out to someone else. So I was able to keep, I was able to maximize profit. I booked my own flights. I covered my own hotel expenses. Initially, you didn't make much money. You made a couple $100. Some courses, I didn't make anything. Some courses, I lost money. But over time, I started actually making really good money, a couple $1,000s in a day, $10,000 in a day, $20,000 in a weekend. And it was all because I started small, paid my dues, built my reputation, developed my own promotion and distribution. So I never have to rely on someone else to do that for me.
That is brilliant. And anyone listening now, hopefully they can hear how important integrity is and building a personal brand is, and how that doesn't come through anything aside from being of service to others and providing value, value, value. And that is the best investment you can make, whether it's in your customers, right? Whether it's in your product, that's what it is, or whether it's in your life. So I have this, have you ever heard of What's Your Word? You ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
So it's an interesting thing that a friend of mine gave me. I'm going to shuffle this deck and I'm going to ask you a question out of here and we'll see what it is. Ah, this is a cool one. So it says, if you could run your own country, what would it be like?
Wow, that's really hard.
You want me to get another one?
No. We can focus on that one. I mean, I'm sure I'll probably...
Well, this will be the last question.
I'll probably think of a much better answer later on, but I would try to run it where meritocracy is heavily involved, meaning that people do well based on their efforts, where everyone has access to opportunity and how well you do is based on the efforts you put in. So it's a meritocracy type approach.
Good. Meritocracy sounds good. There's a country called Bhutan that they have I'll have to look it up because of course I can't remember now, but they have a number that signifies how happy they are. They have like a happiness quotient.
Yeah, that's right. That's awesome. I think I would try to put that in there too, because in America, there's not enough emphasis on mental health.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your path, passion with me, brother. It comes out of your words. I'm so honored to talk to you. Words of wisdom from Coach Mike Mahler, the most balanced man in Vegas.
now I enjoy a lot of balance because I've built my business up where each day I wake up, I can decide whether I want to work that day or not, most of the time. So I got to a point where I own each day. If I want to teach a course, I can. I don't have to, though. My supplement business does well, and it's basically a well-oiled machine that requires minimal management. Sometimes I have to jump in and put a lot of time into it, but most of the time I don't. That was 10 years, though, of being in the fitness industry before I transitioned into this. So don't act like this is something you can achieve in no time at all. You're going to have to pay your dues. There's going to be a process you're going to have to go through. And if you focus on excellence in the process, you give it your best effort in the process, the results will eventually work out in your favor. It's just a matter of time.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for all of this, Mike.
Thank you for tuning in to Off the Clock. Don't miss next week's tips around innovation and HR. Subscribe to the show. You can catch us on YouTube, Apple, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, be kind and thrive.